Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Welcome to White Line Fever, and our guest is Wolf Hoffman. It's the beginning of this week's program, but the final part of the interview with Wolf, which is confusing him enormously. And he's in Nashville. Everyone's in Nashville now. I was talking to Tom Kiefer the other day. Is there anyone left in Los Angeles, Wolf?
Apparently not, because they all went to Nashville recently. Actually, Tom's been there a while,
yeah.
From what I know. I always thought I was the only metal guy, but I found out recently that I'm not. There's quite a few of us now.
Yeah, it's not even country rock.
The bass player.
Sorry.
It moved there also, you know, so there's two of us in except now in Nashville, which is great because we, you know, can hang out all the time and write songs and whatnot.
Yeah, you're like forcing the country guys out. We haven't got a lot of time, and I've still got a few things listed. Just the topics on the songs on Blind Rage, some of it lyrically is fascinating. Human trafficking is addressed in Wanna Be Free. What inspired you to write about that? What inspired the band to address that?
Well, we had the idea for Wanna Be Free and didn't really want it to be so superficial and just sort of plain obvious, being about liberty per se politically, you know. We all want to be free. That was the hook line we had in mind. But then we asked Mark, why don't we write about, or can you write lyrics about different aspects of freedom? You know, it can be personal freedom as far as like, you know, slavery, human day, human trafficking. It could be liberty from drugs, liberty from other relationships or whatever it might be. You know, there's all so many different aspects to personal freedom. So he did a great job and looked at all these different aspects, and each verse is slightly different subject there.
And the curse is about, I suppose, people being, or the first line is about when people die, suddenly everyone's a saint, even if they actually weren't. Is that what that
oh,
is?
Definitely. That's been bothering me all my life. Every time, I mean, you could have been the worst mass murderer in history, but people still find something really nice to say about you when, you know, at your funeral. It's always been bugging me that nobody's really honest about these things. And the whole song context and the lyrics started after a conversation I had with Gabby about, you know, how unjust life sometimes is, you know. It's not that you always get rewarded for being a good person. It seems the opposite seems to be sometimes true when you're, you know, living your life in a certain way, certain higher principles, and you're always doing the right thing. People look at you sometimes as, you know, an easy target, and you're the weak one. And the strong people just sort of push you aside and overrun you. And, you know, it's just, life isn't fair sometimes.
Yeah.
What it really comes down to.
Yeah, I think you get that across well. Now, we are very short on time, but photography, I'd imagine that you'll be trying to take a few pictures while you're here, or have you just moved to doing that professionally? And I just wanted to touch on the fact that once you're successful at one thing, it's very hard to prove to people that you're serious about something else, isn't it? They just see you as that one thing. It's almost like people don't think you're entitled to be good at more than one thing in life. Did you find it hard to push through those barriers and be taken seriously as a photographer?
Yeah, well, I choose to not even mention it that I was or am a musician. You know, when I was starting my photography career, I just kept my mouth shut and became a photographer and didn't tell anybody what else I had been doing in life. I mean, people found out eventually and still do occasionally when I'm on a photo shoot, but for the most part, I keep the two things totally separate, and just I'm the photographer Wolf, and just, it's funny, sometimes people find out anyhow, and it turns out the subject that I'm photographing is also a metal fan, and they have my records at home, you know, but we come to this photo shoot not knowing that from each other. It's kind of funny sometimes.
That's a big topic to discuss, which we don't have time for, so we'll just get a song off you, Wolf, and I'll let you go.
All right, let's see. Why don't we use the opener again, Stampede. guys. This is Wolf Hoffman from Accept, and you're on White Line Fever. Rock on.
Thanks to Wolf Hoffman, the third part of our interview with him. Off to see Accept next week in Brisbane, the day after the Four Nations final in Wellington. And I am here with David Skipwith, and it would appear the final is going to be, as we stand here in Dunedin after midnight, or around midnight, it would appear it's going to be Australia-New Zealand.
Yeah, you'd have to think so. It'd be a mighty upset for Samoa to get up, although it's not beyond them if they reproduce the form they've shown in the opening two games. I mean, yeah, could happen.
16-14, and a fantastic game of football, wasn't it? I mean, really, really outstanding game of football, New Zealand over England.
Yeah, the frenetic pace. It was almost state of origin-like, I guess you might say. I mean, yeah, right end-to-end, side-to-side, it was full-on.
And how have you enjoyed the tournament?
Yeah, really great, really great. I think it exceeded most people's expectations. Yeah, great play. And that's why I'd give Samoa an outside chance tomorrow. Yeah. They've been probably the most impressive side.
What this New Zealand team obviously started like a house on fire, beating Australia 30-12. Then they struggled to beat Samoa up in Whangarei, and tonight they had some good passages, and maybe some there was a long period in the second half there where the game was pretty loose, wasn't it? Which was great for the spectators, but perhaps not great preparation for a final.
Yeah, I think a lot was made out. I mean, obviously, with the first up win over Australia in Brisbane, that surprised most pundits, I think. But Samoa, again, I think they deserve a lot of the praise for how much they pressured New Zealand last week. And I think that held the Kiwis in good stead tonight. When things got tough, they sort of knew what they had to rectify from last week's game. And the physical battle that the Samoans put them through was probably a good preparation for what England dished out.
What sort of atmosphere can we expect or what sort of build-up and sort of enthusiasm can we expect in Wellington?
Well, I think now that the Kiwis have confirmed their spot in the final, I think, the tournament will probably start to get the attention it deserves. I think that's been lacking, particularly here in New Zealand, in terms of general media coverage. Public interest has been there, and particularly here tonight in Dunedin, and I think it'll ramp up a gear in Wellington.
And Dave, you were doing online stuff, and you've got a blog called Run It on the Last. I don't know how much you're doing that at the moment, but this is, you've just started the full time job at a newspaper at the New Zealand Herald in the last few months. How's it going?
Yeah, really good. As a result, the blog it's fallen by the wayside mostly. Although it's something I'd like to get going again in the new year. But really enjoying the new job, and just being able to focus on rugby league full time is incredible.
Look forward to seeing you in Wellington. We don't really give many people on this program a request, but we're going to let you play a song, so I'll let you think while I do a bit of plugging. So WLF Podcast, we are on Twitter. Please come and follow us with WLF Podcast. And also whitelinefever.ning.com. That's completely free to join up, and there's all sorts of stuff going on there. You get music and rock news, and it's, as I said, completely free, and we won't be selling your email address to the Chinese or anything like that. Okay, so after the break, we're going to be in Wollongong, but the break is going to be a song, and I've given Dave 30 seconds to come up with one. It's got to have guitars in it, but I'm sure that won't be a problem for you.
Oh, absolutely. I think we'll go with, in relation to Phil Rudd's dramas during the week, and with the Kiwis' prospects for next weekend, we'll go with A Long Way to the Top.
I really thought you were going to say Back in Black.
Go! Michael from Choir Boys, and you're listening to White Line Fever with Steve Mascourt.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, episode 64. As promised before the song, we are on the other side of the Tasman, but we're not in Wollongong, we're in Sydney, and I should be in Wellington, but my passport is such a mess that I always tell them, I always dare them, I always say, look, I'm going to use it until I fill it up or until you take it off me. And on this occasion, they took my advice and took it off me. So I may not even get to the final, but I'm here with someone. I've tracked down someone in Sydney who was in Wollongong on Sunday. It's Brad Walter. How are you, Brad?
Yeah, I'm good, Steve. And if you don't get to the final, then you won't be able to claim to be the only person that was at every Four Nations game.
Well, a couple of years ago, I actually brushed the final because I went on the Kiss. I went on Sammy Hagar's birthday bash and then the Kiss Cruise, but this time I'll be brushing the final to watch it on TV, which doesn't sound like as good enough an excuse. But it was a great, now 44-18 on Sunday, Australia over Samoa. It was a pretty good game, even though the margin was a bit bigger than we maybe would have liked.
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere, and it was 32-18. There was only 14 points in it until the last 4 minutes when Australia scored two late tries. I thought Samoa gave a pretty good account of themselves, but this Australian team's getting better and better with every game, I think.
Yeah, and just the support. I mean, I think it was the biggest crowd for any sporting event in Wollongong this year. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's the case. And yeah, it was the hill was absolutely packed. It looked fantastic, and there was a lot of Samoa flags there, a lot of support for Samoa.
Now we'll move on to the final in a minute, but Samoa's success in the tournament. What does that mean for the future? What should it mean?
Well, I think they have to play more games, and I believe that there'll be a double header next year, the Pacific Test, which will be on the standalone weekend. I think we're going to see a double header. I don't know what the makeup of those games will be or where they'll be at, but I think that's a good move. Get Papua New Guinea and Tonga involved as well. And the NRL's going over to Fiji next week, and they're going to put some development officers in place, and they've done the same in Samoa. So the NRL are, despite what people think, they are focused on helping to develop the game in the Pacific.
In lieu of an international federation that still doesn't really exist in any real sense, Scotland are going to struggle to match what Samoa have done, aren't they?
No, that's got to be the real concern, hasn't it? There's no Four Nations next year, and then there's going to be a Four Nations in the Northern Hemisphere in 2016. And Scotland, I don't think, will be as competitive as what Samoa is, and people will probably then say, you know, what's the point of it, and this could be the end, the last Four Nations tournament that we see.
And then you'd hope down here the Pacific countries do something while that tournament's going on anyway.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be a Pacific Cup or Pacific Nations Cup or something to and the clubs, you know, that's the big thing, is that the clubs have released their players to play for Samoa in this tournament and in the mid-year test, and they've got to be encouraged to do so, but obviously if there's too many games scheduled, then they'll be reluctant to do so.
Yeah. Now, the final, you said the Aussies have improved. They're a little more clinical on Sunday, although still, I mean, you consider that the only other time they played Samoa, they scored 20 more points. So have they improved enough to beat the Kiwis on Saturday?
Yeah, I don't know. If New Zealand play like they did in the first game and they play to the best of their ability, they'll be very hard to beat. But if they don't, if they're not on their game, I think this Australian team has improved rapidly. I think David Clemmer has grown. Aaron Woods is getting better with every game. He now looks like he's a test player. Ben Hunt is a bit of a revelation, not coming off the interchange bench. Cherry Evans is looking better and better. And you've got to remember, in the first game, Inglis went off at half-time sick, and Cherry Evans didn't even make it to half-time. And Greg Inglis looked, he was devastating on Sunday. So if New Zealand aren't at the top of their game, I think Australia can get them.
If the Kiwis win and they're just Four Nations champions, or do you think we've got world ratings now in rugby league? Do you think they should go to the top if they win the Four Nations?
No, because it's not a full-strength Australian team, even though it's not a full-strength New Zealand team either. So, no, I think the World Cup's only played every 4 years, and if you win it, you deserve to be the number one ranked team until probably the next time it comes around.
Yeah. OK, before we'll let you go, and I'll do my sort of housekeeping after you've got up and gone, because you're off to the NRL. What, a bit of a public debate about Kirisomi Avaha. If you plead guilty to an offence, should the NRL then act after you've pleaded guilty, or should they wait till the legal process has run its course? I'm glad no one's asking me that question, because I wouldn't know how to answer it. So what do you think?
Well, I think I'm going to hear the NRL's explanation on that. I think what they will say is that they didn't have all all the evidence before them at the time, until he appeared in court last Friday for sentencing, and it's only now that they've got all the information and all the details. So we saw Paul Gallen's fine, $50,000. That's now been reduced to $35,000 with $15,000 suspended, because the NRL now say that they have new information or further information that's maybe mitigated what occurred. So I suppose that's an indication of that. You know, you should wait to get all the facts before you act.
It's just so hard to sort of, and I think the previous administration, you know, under David Gallop, said this, that it's just very hard to apply the same rules to different circumstances when the law gets involved, and you know, everyone wants consistency, but it seems there seems to be no magic formula to achieving it.
No, and everyone wants action now, immediately, and then you find, but the problem with that is you find things out later on that may have changed the way you acted. You may have gone harder or you may have gone softer. So, it's really, really difficult, especially when the law is involved. Do you try someone twice? And got to be an issue as well. If someone gets, sent to jail or fined or whatever by the courts, well then, how does the NRL suspending someone? That's like double jeopardy, isn't it, or double punishment?
The thing with, I'll let you go now because you've got to go. But Josh Hodgson with the door on Saturday night in Dunedin, like he told the Raiders that, you know, the people who own the flat said that it was going to be replaced the next day anyway, and he was encouraged to just do, you know, everyone in the room was encouraged to do whatever they wanted to the door, because it was getting replaced the next day anyway. If he's telling the truth there, I'm sorry, I think it's funny, and I don't think there should be any. I mean, they got a new door, which they were going to have to pay for. They got a new door for free out of it. So, you know, I think we can go too far. I'll put my balls on the line here, and I'll say I think it's funny.
Hopefully they got a stronger door.
That was pretty flimsy, wasn't it? And on that note, I'll let you get in your cab and go off and see David Smith. Brad, thanks very much.
Sweet. No worries, mate. But, enjoy the final. Hopefully you'll get there.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of things I can do if I don't get there. Now, before I introduce the next song, I just want to encourage you to check us out on iTunes and make a comment, good or bad, make a comment on iTunes. And also, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, then mention us on Twitter, WLF Podcast. The thing about podcasting is that a lot of people just roll their eyes. Oh, podcast. No, that's lame. So if you're enjoying what you're hearing, then mention us on Twitter. Now, the next song is from Buckcherry, and you're going to recognise the actual some of the words and some of the melody if you've been subjected to shitty pop music over the last 12 months. So I feel sorry for you if you recognise this song, but I'm happy for you that you finally heard a listenable version of it. And after the break, we're back with Matt Jones of The Treatment.
Shit into a bag and pushed it down the stairs. I crashed my car into a bridge. I don't care. You're on.
Hey, this is Tommy from the Casanovas, and you're on White Line Fever.
Okay, back. Okay, we're back with Matt from the treatment. The final part of our interview, been powering through the questions. What are you? You were talking previously about you want to do this until you're 70. What do you? Have you had a think about how big a rock band can get in this era? You know, have you thought about? I mean, you know, is it unrealistic to want to be? You know, headlining the shows that you've been supporting so far. Do you believe that current rock bands will ever get that big? I mean, because a lot of people say it'll just won't happen.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are kind of doubting it these days, and maybe, you know, maybe we are crazy to think, I don't know, but I think for us, it's what we've always dreamed of doing, so if you kind of chase your dream and you believe that you can do it, there's no reason why you shouldn't. I mean, there's so many bands these days that are coming out and playing this kind of music, and there's bands that are already established that are actually starting to sway more towards this kind of music because they know that they can't be screaming their guts out for years upon end. I mean, Arsene Alexandria, every album they're doing, every new album they do, they seem to sing more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for example, Avenged Sevenfold were really heavy when they first come out, and then they've kind of become more classic rocky as time's gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the biggest bands in the world at the moment, so I don't see why a band who are just starting out like us can't dream about being a massive band, because I think the crowds are still out there. I mean, and I can only talk about England, but for example, one of the biggest festivals ever here is Download Festival, and there's 80,000 people, and 80,000 people still go and see these classic rock bands.
Mm.
And those people aren't going to go away. Unfortunately, the bands are going to go away because they are in their 70s, and they're not going to be able to do it forever. But when they have gone, there's going to be that void, and someone's going to have to fill that void, and I don't see why bands like us and other bands that are doing this kind of thing can't fill that void.
But you have to, like, the secret is to find a way to reach those bands' fans and for them to become aware of you, and that is kind of the problematic issue at the moment, isn't it? You can reach the people who are looking for new music, but how do you reach the people who aren't necessarily looking for new music? That's a big conundrum at the moment, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, for us, the best thing, like, I think we can do is keep on doing what we're doing, keep on touring with bigger bands and getting our name out there to as many people as we can, doing stuff like this, like talking to you today, because it gets some new fans in Australia that haven't heard of us before, and just keep on pushing the band as much as we can. That's all we can do, really.
Yeah. It's funny, reading about yourselves and Nikki Sixx, I did a story for Classic Rock AOR last year, the Motley Crue story that was on the front, and in the story... Nikki Sixx, it might have been the year before, getting old, but Nikki Sixx said that he, instead of Steel Panther, that they didn't agree with Steel Panther being on the bill, they wanted you, you know, and that would have been with Def Leppard, who are obviously heroes of yours, and it would have been playing arenas or in your own country. I mean, obviously that would have been a great experience, and I suppose I should ask you what you think of Steel Panther as well.
Well, we've talked with Steel Panther, and we get on with them guys really, really well. So for me to, like, I would never say anything bad about them because they are friends now, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually think what they do, they're actually really, really good at what they do. I know people think it's a joke and stuff like that, and it is a joke, but you have to realise that it is a joke and they're not a serious band, you know?
And they actually love the music, don't they?
Say again, mate, sorry.
Sorry, mate, I didn't mean to interrupt you. They love the music, don't they? They're not,
yeah, exactly.
They're not poking fun at it. They're kind of, they're having fun with it, you know?
Exactly, they're almost paying homage to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So... for us, like, for me, I really like Steel Panther. I like the music. I think it's hilarious. And like I said, we're good friends with them. So I say more power to them. Keep on going.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I've written down a couple more things, mate. I read one interview about these two girls who moved from Canada to be closer to you. how do you deal with that? Well, I suppose you're reaching that level now where maybe there are people who maybe want to invade your space a little bit. Is that a difficult thing to deal with or not?
Well, it depends on the people. Both the girls are actually really good friends. We're actually really good friends with them now.
Yeah,
we've become friends with our merch girl who comes out with us every tour, and we see them pretty much every tour.
Yeah.
And like I said, we're just good mates with them now because they're not crazy. They're crazy in the fact that they've moved from Canada to kind of chase their dreams of rock and roll being in England, but as people, they're not crazy. Obviously, we've had a couple of crazy girl fans and stuff like that, which we obviously kind of have to keep your distance from. But other than that, you know, if people are cool, then we've got no problem with it, you know.
Mate, also lineup changes. I think one of them might have just happened before that show I saw you in Leeds, but. Ben, then Jake, and now Fabian. What's the whole thing? What's the story there? Those lineup changes. What's the story behind those?
It's just one of those unfortunate things. I mean, Ben's kind of heart wasn't in it anymore, and what with his dad becoming ill, he just realised that, you know, this wasn't his, the best thing for him anymore, which was, you know, up to him, and that was, we respect his decision. And for Jake, it was just one of those things where he kind of, again, he did realise it just wasn't for him. He kind of come out on the road, and it's hard, you know. What we do is a hard job. I mean, it looks like good fun, but it is hard work, and for him, it just wasn't for him, and he's decided he wants to go to university instead, and it's just one of the things. But now we've got Fabian, who is, you know, a great guitar player, a great person, and he's really enthusiastic, which is great for us, so I think he's going to be a keeper. So yeah. I don't think we're going to have any more kind of line-up changes recently. So.
Okay, and a couple more things. It's interesting that you actually, you know, when people say, how would you describe your sound, you say AC/DC meets Def Leppard, whereas, as you'd be aware, the boys from Airborne are a bit sick of comparisons with AC/DC. It's a bit different, isn't it? I suppose if people have heard you, you don't want to be compared with anyone, but, you know, if they haven't heard you, then you have to give them a reference point. It's a bit of a tricky, tricky balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've got no problem with being compared to AC/DC or Def Leppard or something like that, because, like, they are our influences, and that's where we're going to draw influence from, so you do end up sounding a bit like the bands you listen to, because it's just a natural thing. So, you know, it's one of the things, we don't see it as a negative, we see it as a positive, so...
Yeah, yeah. Izzy Stradlin got a mention somewhere, too, and I haven't read much about your connections with him. Has he just tweeted that he likes you, or what's the story there?
There was an interview that he did, and he mentioned, like, he got asked, you know, what new bands are you kind of into these days, and he mentioned us, which was cool, and I think he saw us, I can't remember where it was, I think it might have been in Chicago or something like that, I think he saw us in America and liked us. But yeah, he just likes the band, I think.
That's awesome. And is there any, I mean, are there any opportunities on the horizon that we haven't heard about yet, you know, I mean, beyond Oz and beyond, I mean, are you going back to the States or any big tours, or what's on the agenda?
Nothing's planned at the moment. Obviously, for us, we're obviously quite good friends with the Motley Crue camp and stuff, so any tour that they do, we're always trying to get on and trying to get involved with, so if anything happens there, that'd be great. But like I said, nothing's planned, nothing's official, anything like that, so we're just going to see what happens, really.
Right, and I'll go back to where we started with your manager, Laurie. Have there been any moments, particularly, I suppose, when you went to the States on that tour, where you kind of looked at him and said, did this happen to you? Like, when you actually saw it firsthand, and then you realised that he'd been through it all, did you look at him a different way? Because there's obviously parts of touring that he probably wouldn't have gone out of his way to tell you about until you saw it yourself.
No, I don't think we looked at it a different way. I think we just looked at it with a lot of respect, you know. I mean, he kind of did it in the 80s when it was, you know, what we talked about earlier about the heyday. Like, he did all that stuff, and he lived that way. If anything, we were kind of jealous.
Yeah, we exactly. Out of that.
So, yeah, like, he told us everything before we went away. He told us exactly what it was going to be like, and he's never kept anything from us. He's always been 100% honest about stuff, so we knew what we were in for, and we just all had a good time together because of that, so it's all good.
Awesome. What do you have for us, another third song?
I think we're going to play another one of our songs, a previous single called Emergency.
I love that song. Is there a story behind it?
Again, it's kind of usual kind of thing, like probably about a wrong woman that we all met along the way, and someone we know, and someone that is easy to write a song about, so, you know, you have these experiences with girls along the way, don't you?
We'll be right back. Hey, this is Matt from The Treatment, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the program, and we are in beautiful downtown Richmond. Gorgeous late afternoon here in Victoria, and I'm here with Jed and Mike from Tracer. How are you guys?
I'm really well.
I'm also awesome.
Now, I'm going to start with the hardest question first, and we'll work backwards from that. How did you manage to be such a big band in the UK first? I mean, it's a very unusual story, and probably this one answer will go for about 20 minutes, but I mean, how did it end up this way?
You have no idea the sexual favours required to make it happen.
Oh, good, though. Basically, before Jet was in the band, my brother was playing bass. We went over to Europe, spent all our cash on a tour. Then that went pretty well, so we did it again. And on that tour, we got signed to a label in Holland, who allowed us to record a full-length album. And on the strength of that full-length album, we got a song played on radio in the UK, and it just took off from there, basically. So the very next tour that we went on, we supported a pretty decent-sized band, built the fan base as the song was on radio. And then the tour after that, so the fourth tour in. So I must emphasise it's not an overnight success by any stretch, nor is it a cheap success. Fourth tour in, we were headlining our own shows in the UK, and we sold out London, which was about 550 people at that stage. And from then on, we've worked our way upwards to the last show that we played in London with the Bank of the Arts, it was 1,000 people.
Yeah, so. Great band, The Answer. Yeah.
Great dudes too.
See, I'm from Sydney, I say answer, and you're from Adelaide, you say answer. You say answer.
You just but dance and dance.
Dance and pasty and pasty. The first band was Royal Republic, and they were, and they're a Scandinavian band. I mean,
Swedish.
How do you end up on a tour like that?
Do you know what? I don't know how we ended up with that particular band. I have a feeling it's... we have a wonderful team in Europe. We had the label, who was also connected up with a booking agent, connected up with promotions, all that sort of stuff. And they all talked together. And when the word went out that we were looking for somebody to tour with, they happened to be touring at the same time. It was a good fit. And hence we were on it. I do think that they did say that they got given a whole bunch of bands, and we were the first band that they said, yes, please put us on the tour with them. So that was kind of a nice thing to hear from them. They probably say that to bloody everyone. But.
And what's it like being sort of back here and being, you're opening for Screaming Jets? I mean, I'd imagine, like me, you're Jets fans as kids.
Totally. I mean, coming up, you know, being born in the 80s and first hearing music in the 90s, you know, like you get imbued with all of that, you know, and yeah, it's pretty. It's a special thing getting to tour with some, you know, guys that paved the way in Australian rock. You know, like, and they're such lovely dudes. You know, we did a tour, did a run with Gleeso and the Angels a while back, and then getting to meet the rest of the Jets, and yeah, they've treated us really well. You know, like.
But I mean, you're sort of starting from scratch. You're playing a show with the Jets here tonight, and I imagine there maybe won't be too many people in the room when you come on. I mean, is there a temptation to just not bother with Oz? You've obviously got a growing sort of fan base in...
Like, we formed doing it rough and dirty in Europe, you know? Like, and so coming up with that tenacity to just take whatever you could get, you know, and make it work. Now that we're a step down the road in our European world, it's just about remembering that time where we were just scraping along and applying some of that tenacity back to Australia, you know, and showing respect to the great people that are getting behind us here and making it happen here all over again like we did over there, you know.
That's Melbourne for you. That's Australia in summer, actually. It's one of the attractions of Australia in summer, anyway.
It's very attractive.
Okay, this is not TV, so you just have to guess what we're talking about. I warned you guys, song. Song. So what's the first song you got for us, and what's the story behind it?
The first song we're going to do is, we're going to throw at you, is Pistolero, El Pistolero. Mike's got the story behind it for you.
Yeah, basically... this is the album that we went into this year with Kevin Shirley with, and we went into it thinking maybe it'd be cool to try and take a theme and run it through an album, and I love the movie Desperado, and this is basically the title track from the album that follows the Desperado movie, and this is basically the opening scene from that movie in song form.
Turn around the corner way down yonder. But I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. You get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever, rock like fuck. That's what I say, okay? Come on down and rock on.